April 16th is World Voice Day. It's a kind of a celebration, in a way, of your voice and mine and the voices of everyone else in the world. We're going to talk about voice today, and particularly zero in on voice disorders with our two guests, Dr. Seth Daly and Sherry Zelazny, a senior clinical speech pathologist, adult voice manager. Both are from the Voice and Swallowing Clinic at the UW-Madison's Clinical Sciences Center. And the state-of-the-art voice clinic, it's one-of-a-kind technology. They have diagnostic capabilities. They have active research in the field of vocal fold scarring that affects many people with voice disorders. And certainly we welcome your questions and comments as we move along here today. And if you do have a question or something to share with us, please feel free to join us at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Or if you're in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions and comments. Dr. Seth Daly, welcome. Pleased to have you with us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be back.
Sherry Zelazny, welcome back. Nice to have you with us as well.
Thank you very much.
Talk a little more about the Voice Clinic. What are all of the things that that people can avail themselves of at the clinic?
Well, the fact that we have a voice clinic at all is sort of an unusual set of circumstances. In other words, there has to be enough of a population to be able to support it, because it's sort of a niche specialty. It's actually a combination of otolaryngologists, specifically laryngologists, so people who study the larynx, the voice box, and then speech-language pathologists and researchers all working together. So we have a clinical center which specializes in people with voice and swallowing and airway problems, so trouble moving air in and out.
And it could well be that people may just not like the sound of their voice for one reason or another. Maybe it's, I don't know, maybe it's their ability to project their voice. Maybe it's the quality of their voice. Is that something you deal with as well, Sherry?
Well, we deal with people who've noticed a change in their voice.
Ah, okay.
So we are helping people who've noticed that their quality has become more hoarse, or maybe they used to be able to project to an audience and they no longer can. Maybe they can no longer call the dog. Maybe they've lost some notes in their range for speaking or singing. So we're primarily dealing with people who've noticed a change for one reason or another.
And are there professional groups that are more likely, or groups of people that are more likely to have voice disorder? I assume someone who sings for a living would be at risk, perhaps.
Yeah, you know, that's been studied, and one of the groups that's most at risk and who presents most often to a voice clinic for assistance is teachers. So there are, millions of teachers across the United States, and they seem to have a lot of troubles because of two reasons. Number one is they have a huge load, huge vocal load, 6-8 hours a day. And then the other thing is that they basically have no vocal training. So it's ironic. Yeah. Like if you're, a plumber or a professional of some variety, often there's a training period where you acquire skill sets. So as a teacher, often you're instructed in pedagogy, but you're not really instructed in how to use your voice and how to use it properly and over long term, because it's very much of a marathon and not a sprint. And so it seems unusual and counterintuitive that as a teacher you wouldn't have that training, but that's why a lot of them end up in trouble.
Yeah, you wonder about that. There, for example, at the UW-Madison, there are some excellent courses in communications art in voice training, and you wonder if that shouldn't be almost a required course for somebody who is in, well, my business as a teacher and broadcaster, or a teacher who's only talking. You really are talking 8 hours a day at least.
Yeah. I mean, I remember when I used to teach kids anywhere from about 10 up to 18, and I remember just being really exhausted physically, but also exhausted vocally.
Yeah.
And even as a physician now, counseling patients, et cetera, sometimes at the end of the day, I kind of don't want to talk to anyone at all. It's just vocally very very taxing.
How do you evaluate, Sherry, somebody who comes in for voice problems?
Well, in our clinic, we have a unique situation, again, because we have speech pathologists and laryngology specialists. So when a patient calls in, maybe they've noticed a change in their voice, they get put into our voice clinic appointment slot. They come in. The speech pathologist is the first person to see them. We take a complete case history. We talk about all the changes that they've noticed in their voice, any preceding events or illnesses, surgeries. And then we visualize the vocal folds. It's really the only way to know exactly what's going on with a voice is to look at the vocal folds. And we can do that with our video stroboscopic equipment that allows slow motion digital video of the vocal folds in really an exam that doesn't cause people too much discomfort.
I can see where something has to be kind of put down your throat a little bit, but...
Well, the way that we do it most often is with a rigid telescope that goes in the mouth. It does not bend down the throat.
Oh.
It has a lens at the end that peeks over the base of the tongue at about a 70-degree angle, and it's really quite easy to see the vocal folds. There's certain positioning that works for the patients that gets them in a good position so that they're not uncomfortable.
Ah, excellent. Well, lots of people to visit with you, so let's go to the phones, take some calls. Darcy in Milwaukee, it's your turn. Hi, Darcy. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. Thanks for having me. And sometimes it's difficult for me to talk because I have a compromised nervation to one of my vocal cords.
Mm-hmm.
So I know exactly what you're talking about. It's a result of a fusion. I had 5, 6, and 7 fused in my vertebrae. And the funny thing about it is I've been an otolaryngologist, and I've also been to a vocal therapist. My question this morning is that sometimes my voice is better than others. And my personal opinion, and I'm not a doctor, is that there's sometimes my nerve might get pinched. And so it feels different in my throat and in my voice. Would my vocal training that you could maybe offer me be something that would help?
Okay.
Sure, that's a great question. I think that, first of all, I think that there are always ways to help and always ways to make people better. From listening to your voice, it sounds like there are probably a number of ways to make your voice better, both with therapy and maybe some other options. But in answer to your specific question, you know, the voice is a very interesting biofeedback system. So, for example, we modulate the sounds of our voices on an ongoing basis based upon what we hear and based upon what we feel in our throats. So as an example, when you're sick, often your throat hurts, and some of the muscles, because they're in pain in your throat, will contract, and that will alter the way that you use your throat to speak. And so that in and of itself can reduce your vocal efficiency and reduce your ability to produce a good voice.
Oh, excellent. Yes, and I feel that often.
Yeah. Thank you for calling, Darcy.
Thank you for your help.
Yeah, appreciate it. Brian in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Brian.
Hello, how are you?
Great, thanks for calling.
Actually, I was just calling to see if one or both of you could discuss how acid reflux can affect the voice, specifically in singers, and also how the clinic in Madison might be able to treat singers of all different backgrounds, whether they were trained or not. And I'll take my question off the air.
All right. Thanks for calling. Sherry Zelazny?
Well, reflux is an issue that can affect a throat. There's two types of reflux. One is gastroesophageal reflux, where the acid is in the esophagus. And then there's laryngopharyngeal reflux, where the acid actually will creep all the way up to the area of the vocal folds. And a prolonged exposure to this acid, and it doesn't have to be a lot of acid, will start to cause some tissue changes in the larynx, some redness, some swelling. And when the larynx starts to change with swelling, then people will notice voice changes. Depending on what you're doing with your voice will depend on how much those changes are a problem for you. So if you're a professional singer at the top of your game, so to speak, you may notice those changes very, very quickly. And they are true laryngeal changes that need to be taken care of. There's many things that we can do for the professional singer. Even if you sing in the shower, you might notice changes to your voice based on reflux. And voice changes for laryngeal reflux are sometimes the primary symptom. It doesn't necessarily mean you're going to have heartburn, and just because you do not have heartburn doesn't mean that the acid's not coming to the level of the larynx.
All right. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And let's see. Eric in Madison, I believe, is next. Let's go to Eric. Hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. My question is, I know that for hearing, the generative nature of listening to loud concerts, whatever, over the years can really diminish your hearing. Does that affect the same way with your voice? I mean, if you yell constantly, if you're a cheerleader or whatever, does that, I mean, is it the similar type of thing, or can you just regenerate that? I mean,
okay, that's a good question. Dr. Daly?
Yeah, that's a really terrific question. Basically, the vocal cords are, in essence, a sort of shock absorber. When air passes from the lungs out through the vocal cords, they're set into motion and they vibrate somewhere between 100 and 1,000 times per second. So over the course of somebody's life, especially during high aerodynamic pressure situations such as cheerleading or talking to a large classroom where you're needing to project your voice a lot, the shock-absorbing qualities of the vocal folds can be reduced. In essence, the tissue is replaced with some scar and with tissue that is less pliable. And scar, as you know, is pretty stiff and tends not to oscillate nearly as well as the native tissues. And so we do experience physical tissue changes when there is an enormous vocal load over a long period of time.
Hmm. I remember listening to a music show once on Wisconsin Public Radio years ago, and it was about Bob Dylan. And they were playing songs that he sang when he was a smoker and after he quit smoking. And and you could hear there was quite a difference in the quality of his voice from one to the other.
Mm-hmm. Yes, smoking has both transient and also long-term effects. There are some singers who will elect to have a cigarette or two either before, during, or sometimes after their set for effect. Because it will induce transient swelling, which can lower your pitch slightly. No. It can also actually enhance the efficiency of your mechanism, at least on a temporary basis. But obviously, it's never something that we would advocate. No. Smoking and the vocal cords are not meant to walk hand in hand.
No, I wouldn't think so. We're talking about voice disorders today with Dr. Seth Daly and Sherry Zelazny of the Voice and Swallowing Clinic at UW-Madison Clinical Sciences Center. If you'd like to join in with your own question or comment, we'd welcome your call. Give us a ring at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or if you're in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking voice disorders with Dr. Seth Daly and Sherry Zelazny. Glad to have them here and certainly happy to have you listening in. Give us a call if you have a question at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Give a call. We'll be glad to get you on the air. Dr. Daly, I want to go back to an earlier caller as an example of someone's, a woman that had a kind of a higher pitched voice. And I guess I'd like to reemphasize the fact that there is help for her and a lot of other people like her.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things about the voice as opposed to, say, the skin is that, you know, the skin is visible to everyone. You roll up your sleeve, everyone can see their forearm. But the voice, you know, the ability to perceive the voice and when something is different is kind of variable. Nevertheless, if you feel like your voice is different, if you've noticed that the quality has changed, if you feel that you can no longer project, if you're getting tired, something is different. Furthermore, if you have a family member, something like that, especially someone who's a smoker, and you notice a voice change, that's a meaningful alteration which should be evaluated. And as Sherry mentioned, you know, just a few moments ago, we can really only give you good information after we look. So you have to have images of the vocal folds to be able to make a meaningful diagnosis. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it's just guesswork.
And not every doctor may be capable of giving an accurate reading of that. So somebody who's trained in the area, such as yourselves, probably is the better way to go.
Yeah, well, we like to pride ourselves on trying to do a good job, and it's a challenge without the equipment, but fortunately we have lots of toys.
Okay. Well, I tell you what, let's take another call. Irene in Algoma, it's your turn. Hi, Irene. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I recently developed a very sore area on the left side of my throat, and I went to the specialist because I had a very dry mouth, too. And he looked down into my throat and found that, well, my salivary gland was blocked on that side, which was causing a lot of pain because I didn't have much saliva in my mouth. But also he said that I had the acid reflux that you just spoke about.
Yeah.
And he gave me a 30-day supply of Prevacid Solutab.
Okay.
And I've used about 15 days, and my voice is still bad. I'm wondering, you know, is it going to stay this way, or is it going to get better?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, that's a good question, and it really strikes at the heart of some of the ambiguities that we experience in the diagnosis and treatment of laryngopharyngeal reflux, or LPR, as we like to shorten it because it's kind of a big word. Generally speaking, our field believes that a course of treatment somewhere between 3 and 4 months on a pretty good dose of medication is required before we understand if you respond or don't respond to the medication that you've been prescribed. Often we make the diagnosis based on history. Physical examination, like we were talking about, looking at the vocal cords, looking at the larynx is important. But a 2-week course, basically you're still in the early going, and I wouldn't make any judgments for now whatsoever. I think you have to wait it out.
Okay.
And work with your physician to see what's what.
All right. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. And Melissa in Sun Prairie, your turn. Hi, Melissa.
Hi. I'm a clinical speech pathologist, and I just wanted to reaffirm that I think you guys are doing a wonderful job. I had a friend who I referred after having heart surgery who was having a vocal fold that was not functioning, and they were talking surgery, and I said, hey, go to the voice clinic first, and he's doing great now.
Oh.
Terrific.
Thank you.
Yeah. That's wonderful.
If there are any more callers like that, please feel free to call me.
Thanks, Melissa.
Okay.
Yep. Bye-bye. Appreciate it very much. All right. Always great to hear those calls. Mary and Butler, your turn. Hi, Mary.
Oh, yes. I am also trained as a speech pathologist, and that's the kind of work I do now, but my voice has really gone to the tubes here. I had a brain surgery back in 1978, and as a result of that surgery, they're telling me now that my left vocal cord is paralyzed. I'd gone through the medical college here in Milwaukee, and all they wanted to do is put in a plastic sheath into the vocal cord, and that's going to fix everything. But I have a lot of problems. I'm having swallowing. I have a severe problem with asthma where my total airway closes. I no longer obviously can't sing. I have pain in my throat, especially when I'm bending forward. It feels like there's a big lump there. I don't really know where else to go. I've seen doctors, but they're all want to just talk stuff, right? I was wondering, if I wanted to come to your clinic, how would I contact you?
All right. Sherry Zelazny, can you help out here?
Sure. Our appointment number to call for an appointment is 263-6190.
Wait a minute. Don't so fast. I have to write.
Sorry.
Well, I was going to make them repeat it anyway, Mary. So it's area code 608, and it's 263-6190.
6190.
6190. 263-6190.
And then when I would do that, because I really need to know what's what. I always feel like I have to clear my throat, but there's nothing to clear. It's just bad.
Yeah.
Well, Mary, what you would do when you call in is make sure you specify that you have concerns about your voice, and then you'll get put into an appointment slot that allows you to go through our clinic procedure where you see the speech pathologist and the doctor.
Okay, and then from there, because I think there's more involved here than just the voice, but the voice is what we hear.
Yeah.
You know, I think there's something physical there, too, that needs to be
addressed. We'll take a look at it, and we'll let you know.
And good luck, and thank you very much for calling. The number again was 608-263-6190. And here's another number for you to call if you'd like to join in. We finally have some open lines again. We'll get you on fairly quickly at 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or in Madison at 263-1890. Peggy and Frederick, we'll give you a chance now. Hi, Peggy. Thank you for calling.
Hello. I'm also a speech path, and it's so nice to hear our field on the air. I also wanted to see if you would talk about the relationship between Parkinson's and the voice. That seems to be a pretty... The public doesn't know much about that, I think.
Yeah, and actually we'll be talking more about Parkinson's later on, so this is a perfect opportunity, I think. Sherry, do you want to talk about that?
I would love to talk about Parkinson's and voice.
Yeah.
About 90% of individuals with Parkinson's will have difficulty with communication, primarily characterized by low vocal volume, which means that it gets more and more difficult to hear the individual with Parkinson's. The issue with that is the person with Parkinson's doesn't always realize it because of the sensory proprioceptive changes that come with Parkinson's. And as the motor message to the voice system gets more stiff and rigid and slow, which are the typical characteristics of Parkinson's, the voice just is not the same, but the brain doesn't recognize that. So very often with Parkinson's, it's a family member, a spouse, a colleague who will point out to the individual that they're having trouble hearing them. There is very, very successful voice therapy for people with Parkinson's. It's called the Lee Silverman Voice Treatment. It is an intensive, very successful program that we see a lot of success with. And in addition to that, there are some... What we see in the larynx when we look at the vocal folds of a Parkinson's patient is very similar to what we see in the aging larynx, and that's a loss of bulk to the tissue, and it just, the system can't drive itself to do what it's supposed to do. So oftentimes we might have some collagen injected to the vocal folds to give them the bulk that they need, but also do the therapy to address the motor symptoms associated with Parkinson's. Now, if I could take this opportunity to talk about our Parkinson's Playhouse that's coming up.
I was just going to ask about that.
Yeah, we are celebrating World Voice Day with a very, very exciting, unique collaboration with the UW Theater and Drama Department. And what we've done is we have connected the Theater for Cultural and Social Awareness, directed by Patrick Sims. We've connected him and the students with patients with Parkinson's disease who have gone through the Lee Silverman voice treatment. And the Theater for Cultural and Social Awareness has developed two vignettes about Parkinson's disease, effects on the individual, family, and with the primary goal of helping the community to understand Parkinson's and how to be with people with Parkinson's. And we are very, very excited about this event. It's Friday, April 20th from 4 to 6 at the Veterans Administration, the William S. Middleton Memorial Veterans Hospital, in the auditorium on the first floor.
In Madison, that is.
In Madison.
Mm-hmm. So, again, that's April 20th, is that correct?
April 20th from 4 to 6 p.m.
And that's free?
It is free. The parking is free. And I think we have a very, very unique collaboration here with the arts and sciences, and we actually don't know that it's ever been done before, and I think it's going to be a really great, meaningful event for the community.
Sounds like it. And do you have this up online by any chance on your website?
We absolutely do, at the UWHealth.org website it's posted.
UWHealth.org.
And if people want more information about that, they can contact me directly as well.
All right. And thanks very much, Peggy.
You're welcome.
Yeah, appreciate it very much. And let's go to Fish Creek. Talk to Herb for a bit here. Hi, Herb. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, hi, Mr. Larry. I have a comment. Most people that I know, a majority of the people, have a very pleasant voice. But I've noticed in the past few years that people have become I don't know if it's a new wave of some sort, but... I noticed that people are speaking so nasally. They focus their voices into their noses, it seems like. And it becomes very unpleasant, and especially some of the people who are in Larry's business. I noticed that they're crying and whining. And I don't understand what the purpose of this would be. And if I'm just hearing wrong or what?
Well, I'll tell you what. For one thing, you know, when you're from Wisconsin, you know, when people say Wisconsin, they almost always say it through their nose if you're from the state. But what about it, Seth?
Well, I'd be interested in knowing if there's either an age group that you observe this in, or if there's a particular profession that you have been observing this sound in.
Well, yes, I was a singer for 34 years.
Uh-huh.
And not the folksy type, but the classic singing. Mm-hmm. And I think that it would help a lot if in the schools they would have at least a half an hour sometime during the week to really have a singing session that these young people can develop their voices and project them. And
okay. All right. Well, Dr. Daly, go ahead.
Yeah, I would say that there's, you know, there are probably a couple of things having to do with your perceptions. One is that as a trained singer, you're going to have kind of a reasonably high bar for appreciating people's voices, for noticing subtle alterations both in your own and then in other people's voices. So you are perhaps not the average bear, if you will, vocally speaking. And then the other thing is that as we age, almost like with Parkinson's, you know, Sherry was saying that the self-perception can be altered. And so what you hear in yourself may be changed, and also some of what you're appreciating in other people may be slightly altered.
Yeah, interesting. Thanks a lot, Herb, for calling. Appreciate it. Andrina in McHenry, Illinois, you are next. Hi, thank you for calling.
Oh, hi. Thank you very much. I'm a singer. I'm a fiddle player, but I'm getting on. You know, I'm getting up there. And I went to an ear, nose, and throat, and they said that, well, because of my age, the flabbiness, and there's different notes within the vocal range that are becoming like double noted, and also my voice gets very tired, and also if I'm in a loud room, like loud music playing, it will make my speech. I mean, it will affect, you know, like I certainly wouldn't sing after an episode of a loud band or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just wondering. Is it true that when you get old, you get flabby right in the vocal cord, where this will happen within a certain set range within your voice, like the mid-range?
Hmm. Well, flabby is sort of a descriptor which some physicians might use to describe the shape of the vocal cord as we age. Sherry mentioned a few moments ago that we have a loss of bulk of each vocal fold as we age, and that is pretty well documented. And because the vocal cords function like a little valve, vocal cords move together and then air passes by. And the farther the vocal folds are separated, the more air leaks through. So it's sort of like having a leaky valve, and that's why you get tired and you don't want to talk to anyone after the sets, and why you're having trouble projecting, particularly with a loud band. So I think from what you're describing, it's pretty classic for some of the beginnings of changes related to the aging process. Now, that doesn't mean there aren't things you can do about it, both from a behavioral standpoint with a speech pathologist like Sherry, or there's certainly some temporary and even permanent options which a surgeon like myself might be able to offer you.
Mm-hmm. All right.
What about allergies? Mm. I think I'm pretty much allergic to certain things.
Mm. Yeah.
And there's, you know, like fullness within the throat, and a little bit of acid reflux. So, I mean, maybe all two of those things contribute.
Add them up and, yeah, okay. What do you think?
Well, most vocal problems are what we call multifactorial. So usually it requires multiple hits to the system for someone to begin to be symptomatic. And so it would not surprise me if you had some sort of combination of physical changes related to the aging, along perhaps with allergy or excess mucus from acid reflux or from the allergy itself. It would not surprise me one whit if you had a combination deal, if you will.
Mm. Thank you very much for calling, and good luck to you, Andrea. I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Tim in Janesville, your turn. Hi, Tim.
Hi. My father had a heart attack. He had a quadruple bypass, and then he had a stroke during the surgery. Now, he's receiving therapy for lots of things. You know, he's just getting to the point where he can walk and everything like that. But his he had a trach in that's been removed. He's swallowing now. They're just starting to feed him baby food. He's still at the hospital quite a bit, but we had him out to the house. And what can we do as a family to help improve his he's got pitch to his voice. He talks. I would say maybe a whole step. He'll start out kind of high and then kind of go low. We can't understand him. I'll listen off the air. I guess my question is, what can we as a family do to help? He is undergoing speech therapy. I think it's weekly. I don't think it's, you know, real often. And the other question is those when people have throat cancer and they hold that kind of a stainless steel rod up to their voice box. I was wondering what those were called. If that's something down the road, because we really just can't understand what he's trying to tell us, and it's frustrating. Or are there any other devices while he's undergoing this therapy that might help that you guys might know of? I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for calling.
Okay, so there's sort of three things in there, if I understand correctly. One, we'll go backwards. One is, are there any additional ways for your dad to communicate? I think, first of all, it's most important to get a good evaluation because there are multiple reasons for people to have poor communication after a stroke. It could be from the brain problem where you can't put words together and you can't even produce words because your brain doesn't trigger properly. Two is that you might have articulatory problems like with your mouth and your jaw and your tongue and your lips and your teeth and your ability to make sound. And then the other thing might have to do with the vocal cords themselves. So getting a good evaluation is by far the most important component so you can be set on the right track for therapy and for the, you know, for moving forward. The rod, as you describe it, is basically a battery pack that is attached to a vibrating mechanism. So it produces sound, which can be altered by your vocal tract, and that's called an electrolarynx. So almost like an electric larynx. So it produces a vibratory source. And as far as what can the family do, once you have a good plan of action, as established by your physician and by your speech pathology team, who hopefully is evaluating your, you know, your dad as a group and kind of consulting and talking together, then what you really need to do is just follow their instructions. Mm-hmm. There's nothing that you should personally feel like you need to do. In other words, you don't need to act as the physician or as anything else. You just need to kind of plug your dad into the proper channels and hopefully that'll get him where he needs to go.
And know what those channels are and know what the recommendations are and help with those recommendations once they're given, I guess, is probably the best thing any family can do.
Yeah. Also, just with yourself, have patience because recovery after stroke can be a challenge for both the person who's undergone it and then also the supporting cast.
Yeah, it's very frustrating. My dad had a stroke, and so his voice couldn't speak for a while and had to go through therapy. And so it was very frustrating for him more than anybody, I think, because it was, when you can't speak and express yourself that way, it's got to be just a terrible experience, at least in the short term. Tim, good luck to you. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. And Seth and Madison, your turn. Hi, Seth.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I have a question. A couple of your callers have mentioned having, for example, brain surgery and then having issues with their voice. My mother just had a triple bypass, and they had told her beforehand that her voice might be affected. And it comes and goes. Sometimes it's a little quavery. Sometimes it's the same. And I was just wondering why that is. They didn't say why it would happen.
Sure. Well, it's reasonably straightforward. The heart is on the left side of your body, and the nerve to the left vocal cord dips down into the chest near your heart. And when you perform open heart surgery, the nerve that goes to that vocal cord can be impacted in some way. It can be pulled upon. It can even be cut under rare circumstances. And so that would give someone what we call a vocal cord weakness or even a vocal cord paralysis. Another reason for someone to be hoarse after a major procedure like that is that they will have been intubated.
Intubated, yeah.
Yeah, and so the having a large plastic tube in your throat is not something which Mother Nature generally accounted for until you know, the last 60 years or so in human history. And so there are physical changes to the larynx. As I mentioned before, there are biofeedback changes. And generally speaking, if it's just an intubation change, the voice should normalize within about 2 to 4 weeks.
Okay.
If it is not normalized at 2 to 4 weeks, then it might be worthwhile seeking an evaluation.
Okay.
All right.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks very much for calling in. Lois in Middleton, your turn. Hi, Lois.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
A few, like 12 years ago, my son was diagnosed with a cyst on his vocal cords. And this was diagnosed because he had hoarseness in his voice. And I'm wondering, eventually they just went away, which we were glad of because they were talking about surgery and the fact that it could affect his vocal cords and his singing. Can those cysts return? And how would you know without a I mean, they went down his throat with a scope.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Well, that's basically diagnosis of what we would call a benign vocal cord lesion, like a cyst. Is still something of a slippery eel, particularly in the pediatric population. In adults who are a little bit more cooperative just based upon age and that sort of thing, we can generally get better office pictures and feel more secure about the diagnosis. Some cysts will, in fact, go away. Others really will not. So whether or not it was a cyst at all is difficult to say. It may very well have been, or it may have not. If the voice has normalized to a greater rather than lesser degree and there are no residual symptoms, then you're pretty much in the clear. In other words, there's certainly nothing to worry about. And if the voice is doing fine, then you're kind of all done.
Mm-hmm. Well, he still has hoarseness off and on, and to me it doesn't sound completely normal.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, the only way for, you know, the only way, as Sherry mentioned before, is just to look. We really need to look and to acquire good pictures. We do have some new scopes, we as a field, where it's called a chip and a tip scope, and it goes in through the nose, and it's reasonably comfortable, and it gives us absolutely outstanding pictures up close and personal of the vocal folds, which were really not available before.
Okay.
Interesting.
It happened when he was a teenager, and now he's an adult, so it might be worth looking at again.
Sure. I think it's a little bit beauty is in the eye of the beholder. In other words, if he as an adult feels that his voice is hoarse and it's problematic, then he's hoarse and it's problematic and he should come in.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Okay.
Thanks very much for calling. And Sherry, I want to go back to the Parkinson Playhouse again and just remind people, what is it all about again and tell us about it.
The Parkinson's Playhouse is our second annual celebration of World Voice Day. We are embarked on a very unique, exciting collaboration with the Theater for Cultural and Social Awareness, which is right here in the UW Theater and Drama Department. It's directed by Patrick Sims, and we have joined the theater students and the patients for their own education, and the theater students have written two vignettes about Parkinson's, and our goal is to help with community education about Parkinson's, the voice issues involved with Parkinson's, and have audience discussion about these two scenarios. It's been a really, really exciting process with this collaboration. It's quite unique, and we're very, very excited about it. It's going to take place Friday, April 20th, from 4 to 6 at the William Middleton Memorial VA Hospital Auditorium, which is right on the first floor. There, the parking is free, the event is free, and we really hope to see a lot of people there.
I hope so, too. And I want to thank you both very much for being with us today. It's a real pleasure. And I hope we can do this again. It was about a year and a half ago that you were on. We can't make it so long next time.
I agree.
We'd love to be back.
All right. Thanks a lot for being with us. Dr. Seth Daly, Sherry Zelazny. Sherry is senior clinical speech pathologist, adult voice manager. Both of them work out of the Voice and Swallowing Clinic at the UW-Madison Clinical Sciences Center. Kind of a unique clinic. They really specialize and help a lot of people every single year. They're the clinic, give me one, just before you go, give me one, what's the website address for people to go to the website, Sherry? Have you got that?
Yeah, the website is the uwhealth.org website, and our clinic number is 263-6190, 608. 263-6190, and the uwhealth.org is the website.
Thank you both very much again.
Thank you.
And it seems like the perfect topic to precede to have preceded our next topic coming up, which is stamping out Parkinson's disease. We'll be talking about that next year on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.